Welcome to the Information Entropy Podcast, where I am your host, Mitch. I did that. I do this every week.
I thought like, you were going to go, I am Spartacus.
My name is. I am. I'm Mitchell, your host. One of your hosts. The other one talking is Tom.
Hello.
This week we're talking about entropy. In this episode, we'll explore different ways that entropy can be defined, measures, some implications of it in our universe and our own lives. So if you're interested in learning more about entropy, tune into this episode of the Information Entropy Podcast. Thank you for listening in advance. You can find us on Spotify. That's the one, Tom. See how I did that?
You just did the one call out. you can find us in other places as well.
You can.
If your heart so desires.
Yeah. That's it. That's the intro. Wrap that up. Put that bow on it. Nice. Nailed it.
Nipped it
How
in
are
the
you
bud.
Doing, Tom? How's it going?
Yeah. I'm good, mate. How's your streamlining current existential crisis on identity? How's that going?
It's fine. I just hate saying I'm Mitchell. My name is. I just absolutely despise it because it's just like, I don't know. No one else cares. Like receiving it. Like if I'm meeting anybody, nobody else cares if I go, oh yeah, hi, my name's Mitchell, blah, 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 blah. They're like, it's a blip on the day. They probably won't even remember my name. But I'm like,
honestly, I've never thought about it.
Yeah, I think it's until one of you bring it up. Like, I've overthunk it now, and now every time I say it, it comes to the forefront.
Yeah,
it's a trigger. Yeah,
maybe we'll do identity at some point, and we can really get down to the depths of it.
And just really, where does our identity come from?
Yeah,
what makes that up? That sounds like an extrospective nightmare. Maybe we won't do.
That'll send us down a rabbit hole for a few weeks.
Maybe go talk to our therapists about that instead of our podcast listeners. Yeah, so when I was five, I fell in a pond. Oh, dear me.
If nothing else, we can serve as an example of what not to be.
Yeah,
take it away.
We got some facts. You got some facts? Did you look at some facts?
No.
Okay, come on, Tom.
Honestly, I thought about it and I was like, facts about entropy.
Yeah.
And then I got distracted about defining what entropy was. And then I never came back to the facts. So, sorry.
Okay, well, I've got a few. Okay. The word entropy comes from the Greek word entropion, which means to turn into.
Yes. Good fact.
Is that a normal way to answer, like, someone when they say a fact? You just say yes? Is that
I was kind of agreeing with you. I was like, oh, I've read that. Yes. Apologies. Go for it. This is what happens when you cross monster with a coffee in the space of about half an hour.
I'm drinking a cider. So
I'll get on that.
I'm going the other way.
Yeah, that's fair.
Got some Thatcher's Gold. Hashtag not sponsor. Hashtag not ad.
Oh, I had a rattler yesterday. I had one of those.
Oh,
in
which
while.
One? Just normal?
Yeah,
berry?
Yeah, no, not berry. We either go cloudy, like, or 6%, or we go normal.
Nah, mate, berries. Berries the best.
Nah.
Okay, mate. Your opinion's wrong for the second time this week.
Yeah, we could dive into that later. Wow.
Yeah, that was interesting. Second fact. There is a SI, what's it, scientific standard? Standard? What's the SI stand for?
Standard unit?
Yeah, that I definitely sounds like it stands for unit.
No, because it's SI unit, isn't it? Which is where my brain is getting confused. It's the International System of Units, SI.
Yeah, but
no, that's literally the International System of Units, abbreviated as SI,
which makes sense.
That makes so much
sense. Why would it not be IS? It's units. I think. Oh, I don't know. System of Units. Because I think everything else was taken. Maybe.
Oh, possibly. Yeah.
Yeah. If you didn't know, there's actually 7 base units that are defined into 22 derived units of special names and symbols.
I'm finding this out now, yeah.
Yeah, you've got length, time, amount of substance, electrical current, temperature, luminosity intensity, which is a candela?
Candela, yeah.
Yeah, and then mass, which is a kilogram. And then that's broken down into 22 sub-ones, which is, yeah.
So that's where like centimeter and millimeter come from, because they're a breakdown of a standard unit, which is meter.
Technically, no. It means like some from meter, you've then got joule, because that's energy work amount of heat. Then you've got from kilogram, you've got newtons, then pascals.
Oh, I see. It's not
and
like
and then a... from joules. No, 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 no. Because okay. Then you've got like, you could have like giga, penta, yeah, tera.
That's what I was thinking.
Google. Yeah. You've got things like
infinite, right? Up and down.
Hertz, a becquerel, which is a radioactivity.
Oh.
Let me open this in a new tab. It's a NIST. So, background activity of radionuclide.
Oh.
Then you've got your pressure in pascals. You've got gray, which is an absorbed dose, which is joules per kilogram.
Makes sense.
You have a sievert, which is the dose equivalent, which is joules per kilogram as well. You've got, then you've got down. This is actually really interesting. There's a NIST, if you don't know, is the
National Institute of Standards and Technology.
Yeah, we've got one for cybersecurity. It's a framework, but they've got one for literally everything. It's like the ISO standards. There's like how to test things. NIST is the same. Down the ampere track, you've got a coulomb, which is electrical charge. You've got a volt, which is voltage or electromotive force. You've got an ohm, which is resistance, and then you've got Siemens, which is conductance. what else we got down here on the candela? You've got
candela,
lux, which
lumen.
Is per meter squared. You've got lumen, and then you got steridian, which is a solid angle. Yeah.
Yes.
That was all cool.
It's very cool. Maybe we should do SI units one day. That would be interesting to dive into.
Yeah.
Even further.
Okay. Well. Yeah. That's the standard units for entropy is joules per Kelvin. Yeah, that's where we're getting to.
That's where we're getting to. Yes.
Yeah. Far behind that. And the third fact is that the second law of third thermodynamics states that entropy of an isolated system always increases over time.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a fact.
The second law of thermodynamics, possibly the best law, in my opinion.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. No, I was just saying. Oh, sorry,
a bit of a wild one, mate, aren't you?
Just
saying the words
it's
back
my favourite
in weird, in different orders.
I was just saying it's my favourite one.
Yeah. Okay.
In particular. Yeah.
6.5 is my favourite. It's one that nobody knows.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
That's good. Well, I'm sure that'll come out one day. You'll just hold on to that until then.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Right. Okay.
Fun stuff. So
finally got through the internet.
Entropy then.
No, mate, you got through the news. I know you're on a wild one with your coffee and your monster, but then we have a way of doing things around here.
In my head, facts came after the news, but go for it. Oh, dear.
Oh, no.
Apologies. Take it away.
So the news that I had a look at this morning, which I thought was quite good, is another one of those coincidence drug use of things. And it's to do with the weight loss drugs. There's two currently that are quite prevalent. I think it like inhibits your hunger, your appetite.
Okay.
Is the way that it works. There's one called Wegovy, and there's another one called Zempic. And what they found in a recent study, or some research has come about, is that it may also help treat addiction.
Oh.
So people started using it to for weight loss because, you know, it can be hard this is the interesting thing, because I would say if you're struggling with weight loss, you have an addiction to food. Because some people that is really the case where it's like either habitual or you do it for like reasons, stress eating, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it can depend, but yeah, for some people that's definitely the case. Yeah.
So what people have found is that who were taking this and who were going on that weight loss journey, they also found that there was consistent consistent less thoughts about food and alcohol and nicotine, because they were finding that they were eating less, drinking less, and their need to go for smokes also was decreased. And somebody mentioned it, and then they ran some trials with on some mice.
Known for their smoking.
They used sweet non-alcoholic liquids and unsweetened calorie-rich liquids to do the test.
Okay.
Because the medication has proved already for obesity, for its ability to reducing appetite and food intake. That's what it's used for. The National Institutes on Drug Abuse and National Institutes on Alcohol Abuse has said. They've started now doing, I think they're just about moving to human trials to see if it can actually help with addiction, which if it does, awesome.
Yeah, awesome, that's great.
Going on. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, actually.
One recent study of the potential of Smeglitude, which is the brand name, which is, again, if you want a stupid brand name, to curb addiction, it looked at rats and mice that had already developed excessive drinking behaviours. Shame for those mice. The experiments were designed to mimic binge drinking and alcohol dependency in people. The rodents were subsequently dosed with the drug. I'm not going to say the name because it's stupid. And they drank less alcohol than the rodents that weren't. The addiction physician, scientist Lorenzo Laggio and colleagues reported online in the GCI Insight. And then similar results were published again, like a month later, in the eBiomedicine by researchers at the University of Gothenburg in Sweden. Or Gutenberg.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, that's actually huge news because, yeah, I mean, currently the addiction path is a very hard one to get off.
Yeah, cold turkey and hope for the best.
Yeah.
For those countries that don't instantly vilify people that have got addiction issues, they can use it in rehabilitation. That actually happens.
Yeah. That'd be really cool. I guess, like, it may be ideal to try and take the side effect away of removing the appetite if possible, if you're just trying to treat addiction. Because sometimes if you're just trying to treat addiction, and then these people often, or not often, sometimes people who are addicted also don't eat a lot. Could send them down another path. But yeah, very cool progress.
For the initial stage of getting them off the, where the addiction is at its highest.
Yeah.
To the strongest point, I think it'd be very useful for if this is works. The current human study is very small. There's only 9 people that are actually completing it. And 16 people are partially already done. So 24 people in total, or 25 people in total. I'm receiving it for just 19 days.
Okay. That's good though. I guess with the initial clinical trials, you got to go small before you ramp up from there.
Yeah, plus I think it's quite difficult to find people that are, also you don't have to find people that are overweight and drug abusers, but people with addiction issues may not be the easiest study individuals to find.
Yeah, volunteers for, right?
Yeah. I don't know. They could go two ways. You could say, like, look, we can help with your addiction, and that could be a motivator in itself. Or they can, you know, promise them some drugs. if they've got a drug addiction, he said, look, we'll give you more drugs.
These things are normally paid, incentive.
You know.
Yeah.
I'm sure if you're that deep in the drug use that you need the money.
Yeah, for sure. Promising stuff.
Yeah.
Promising stuff. All right. Is it time for entropy yet? Am I skipping over anything else?
No. We can dive down the what is entropy? Where did it come from? Who coined it?
I must say, well done on picking one news in source and sticking with it. Unlike my attempt last week, where I covered about 7 pieces of news. well done for that. Decisiveness.
Yeah. It's the efficiency of the lazy, Tom. That's my trick in life.
Okay, yeah.
Like, I love everything being efficient because I'm so lazy, I hate extra work.
That's fair. That is good.
I spent at work today, I spent the whole day pretty much redoing a whole like project or flow of one thing that needed to be done, because doing it the way that people had done it for 5 years was like pulling teeth.
Streamlining,
that's what I'm there for.
That's a good time. Cool. Entropy then.
Yeah,
entropy,
mate.
Entropy. It's about time. Yeah. You know, I hadn't realized we hadn't done an episode on entropy, considering it's in the name of our show.
For now.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure we covered it at the very beginning, first episode. That was over a year ago.
Not my notes. Intro. Let's have a look. No.
Oh, I seem to remember our first
episode, we just gave our credentials to who we've interviewed over the time. So we're not just like a bunch of randomers who just started a podcast. And then we gave some references to some things that kept popping up, like tardigrades, the great dying, that kind of stuff.
We love tardigrades. What a good time.
Oh, yeah, I love them. Great time.
So entropy then is a scientific concept, but it's also a measurable physical property.
That's got an SI unit, isn't it? Wait, exactly. Come on, Tom, we've already covered this.
Okay, apologies. It's most commonly associated with a state of disorder, randomness, or uncertainty. But I guess that the principle behind the fact that it's both a concept as well as a measurable physical property can make it quite confusing.
Yes.
For a lot of people, because it's used colloquially in different concepts and also scientifically in different settings, which can also make it confusing. But I guess in the most simplest terms, we might consider entropy to be a measure of the amount of disorder or randomness in a system. It quantifies the number of ways that a system's particles or components can be arranged while still maintaining the same macroscopic properties. So a system with high entropy is more disordered and has more possible arrangements, while a system with low entropy is more ordered and has fewer possible arrangements. So if you think about a solid versus a gas, like a table, all the molecules are ordered, stuck together, they ain't moving, low entropy, whereas a gas, where, you know, literally air, all the molecules and particles are moving around, bouncing around, very little order there, that would be very high entropy.
I'm not even sure if that works.
Why?
Because you're comparing the two. I'm not sure if you could say a table has low entropy.
Well, the structure, the molecular structure of a table is very ordered, thus it has low entropy. And over time, will decay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it has more to decay than the gas and the air.
Yes, because the gas and the air technically has already decayed to a state of lower entropy. High entropy, sorry, because it's more disordered.
This always bends my brain, because if you had a box that's been sat and sealed for a while that had the gas all over the show, would you say it's got high entropy? Would you say it's got low entropy because it's not moving? It's at that state where everything is trying to get an equal distance away from each other and then become stable. So it has done that.
Yeah, I mean, that is a question. And that relates, I guess, to a very important principle or revelation of the second law of thermodynamics and entropy, which relates, I guess, if you imagine the universe was that box, we are heading in that direction. That is the current theory, where every single molecule ever will be equidistant apart. Heat death, you know, all that good stuff, which we'll come on to later. So I think everything in that case, you may consider it to be low entropy again, but at the same time, really high entropy, because literally everything is far apart from each other. But I guess you may consider that an ordered system, in which case it's low entropy.
This is quite interesting. So different materials have different entropy values. You didn't know?
I did not.
Yeah. So, for example, graphite is got an entropy value. So this is where it gets confusing, because you've got, as you said, the SI unit, the standard scientific unit, which can actually give a value, scientific value, to entropy.
Yeah.
So graphite has got an entropy of 6 joules per Kelvin, whereas water's got 70 joules per Kelvin.
Yeah.
And nitrogen is 192 joules per Kelvin. Well, I don't know what that means.
So when entropy...
It's energy per heat.
Yeah, when entropy was very first introduced in 1892, I'm going to go with, and I completely forgot the guy. 1865. Oh, I completely forgot the guy's name. Ralph something?
Rudolf Clausius.
That guy.
Clausius.
He first introduced it within the concept of heat. So if you have, for example, a setup where you have hot water on one side and cold water on the other, and you allow them to mix over time, hot or heat will always flow into cold until they have mixed equally, and the entropy increases over time. Because if you imagine cold as blue particles and hot as red particles, and they're separated at the first, and then you allow them to mix, over time there'll be an even mix of the red and blue particles rather than them being separated. So when they're separated, order, lower entropy. When they're mixed, more chaos, higher entropy. So that's where all the theory comes from. It comes from heat distribution, which is why joules is used.
Yeah, not just heat distribution, a useless heat.
Yes.
That is the term. When energy in any form eventually inevitably turns into a useless heat.
Yes,
so how
energy
long would
cannot
a block,
be utilized.
A block of granite, how long would it take to turn into a block of useless heat?
Dust.
Dust. Anybody know dust?
Yeah. So the second law of thermodynamics, which fully relies upon this concept, is a principle that states the total entropy of an isolated system, that is, a system that doesn't exchange matter or energy with its surroundings, always increases over time or remains constant, but never decreases, as Mitch very much said earlier. And it's often stated... Well, yeah, pretty much like that. But it's concerned with the direction of natural processes. And we see this all the time. If we put milk in my tea or coffee, exactly as I said, they start very ordered, very separated. And then over time, they will mix together, even if I don't stir it. If I stir it, it speeds up the process. But even though we're looking at that and go, okay, that's a milky tea, it may seem ordered. But when you're looking at it at the particle scale, there's a whole mix there. The two... particles, milk, and tea, molecules, let's say, integrated. So chaos, not ordered. That these processes, these natural processes, run in one sense. They are not reversible.
Yeah.
So irreversibility refers to the processes that once they occur... cannot be undone to return the system to its initial state without outside intervention. This irreversibility is often associated with an increase in entropy. So one example that's often given here is if you see a tree burning down, you're shown a video of a tree burning down, and then that is reversed. You know that that's not that can't be happening in that direction. Does that make sense?
No. Yeah. The tree burning down, kind of. Yeah. But yeah. A bit of a weird.
Okay. I've developed a little bit of an overview to try and hopefully make this simple. We'll see.
I think the cup of water is essentially the easiest. Or
bucket of sand and a sandcastle. That's what I went for.
Eventually, the sandcastle was going to fall down into just sand.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
If we say entropy in a closed system, entropy increases over time. That is, left to its own devices, the system tends to disorder. So if I have a bucket of sand and I let it drop from the bucket onto the beach How likely is it that the sand will fall on the shape of a sandcastle? Not very. It's gone from an ordered place in the bucket, I put it there, to quite unordered.
You lost me. I thought you just meant if you made a sandcastle, how long is it going to take to not become a sandcastle?
That can also work.
You're talking just probabilistic on whether it's just going to
and that fall is into... what entropy is. It's also a measure of the probabilistic properties of atoms. At the same, this is why it's confusing. But okay, let's say this is one of.
Yeah. This isn't what entropy is. This is one of
entropy as a concept. Let's say I've taken that sandcastle and I've put an effort, energy, into making it ordered. I've slammed it down, I've padded it on top, and I've lifted the bucket up, and then there's a sandcastle on the beach. Over time, that will fall down and crumble. And you could be like, oh, but I can reverse that, because even if I took the time to put every atom back in place exactly as it was, what you've had to do there is, one, put energy from yourself into that system, and you know, potentially you're moving sand around the castle itself. What you're doing there is you're decreasing the entropy of the system of the sandcastle, because you're creating order, but you're increasing the entropy around the sandcastle, i.e. you're taking energy out of yourself, you're messing the sand around the outside. So even if you were reversing or recreating the initial system that you had before, to achieve that, you are increasing the entropy of the system around it. So to decrease entropy, to create order, you need energy.
Yeah, that's true.
That is a closed system.
As with everything, with speed, energy, it's a matter of perspective, surely.
No.
Because the argument of that is, I see a beach not with sandcastles on it being more orderly than a beach than you making a sandcastle. So you putting the sandcastle in this onto the beach makes it disorderly for me. So using this analogy is a matter of perspective.
I would have said not, because if a beach is a pile of sand, the only reason it's a pile is because gravity is pulling it down. But there is nothing stopping those atoms mixing. Whereas when you've created a castle, you're creating a solid structure where little mixing is going on. And I think that's the key principle of structured order in the case of a solid substance compared to the free-flowing chaos of a gas, for example.
I don't think we're going to agree on this, because you're saying that you can only have low entropy for man-made things in this situation.
No, in this, that's just the example I'm giving.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The example is difficult because it's all a matter of perspective. It's not, it doesn't work universally. Plus, this whole, the probabilistic setup is the second use of entropy that was created in 1875, not the original 1865 from the physicist Rudolf. Because this is from the Austrian physicist Ludwig, and the American scientist William Gibbs gave it the probabilistic setup of statistical mechanics, which is the whole, if you drop the bucket of sand, is it going to land perfectly like a sandcastle?
Because they were more... So the classical view is more macroscopic. Entropy is described in the terms of macroscopic quantities such as heat and temperature, and ties very much into the thermodynamic law, whereas the statistical view considers entropy in terms of the number of possible microscopic arrangements, and thus, as you were saying, if I pull this bucket out, what's the probability it falls into any shape? Those are the two.
In my opinion, that's the more useless of the two. Because
that is how we would measure it, whereas the classical view is more, I don't want to say theory, because it's not. It works on heat transfer, but it's more concerned with the properties. So if I look at the whole system as a whole rather than 10 molecules, 10 molecules can seem, if I'm looking at them on the edge of, say, the entropy line, the line of disorder, even if they're separated either side of that, I may view that system as completely disorganized. Whereas if I zoom out and view the whole system, I may view it as completely organized. So that's where, yeah, they can disagree with each other. And I think that makes it confusing.
Mm-hmm. Again, perspective changes the things.
It does. But that's where and Boltzmann
Albert,
turned
Albert
up.
Einstein. Perspective.
Perspective, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's where Boltzmann and Boltzmann entropy turned up. And he was like, well, if we just make a formula that quantifies entropy in terms of the natural logarithm of the number of states that it could be in from the microscopic level to the macroscopic level. And that's how people are trying to view entropy these days, or trying to unify the two views from the microscopic to the macroscopic. But yes, it can be quite confusing. For sure.
Yeah. Because it's thrown around a lot. Which is
it
the
is
issue.
Thrown around a lot. But I think from a layman's terms, you can just be like, closed system, no entropy, no energy, sorry, is being put into that system. Entropy will increase over time. If I leave a sandcastle in a box, over time, it's going to decay into a pile of sand.
Yeah. There's the decay of diversity. Or the tendency towards uniformed distribution.
Sure.
You sound so uncertain of that, sure.
Well,
mate.
You said the decay of diversity, whereas I think I would say it's the increase of diversity, no? Because you're going from a uniform structure to chaos.
No, this is where we're gonna disagree again.
Okay. I don't know if entropy is something to disagree about.
Well, it's one of those things. Where, like, so sociology now uses it. If you didn't know,
okay.
And so does IT. And you've got things like information entropy principles, that kind of stuff. Learning things. This is what I'm trying to keep in mind, because I started a new hyperfixation, new hobby. Yay, go me. It's an outside one this time.
Yeah.
I know, making bounds. And every time I'm bad at it, I just have to think, okay, I'm in a state of low entropy. I'm in a state of... I'm in a state of high entropy at the moment. I'm in a state of high entropy. I'm going towards low entropy. I'm making that journey, because in terms of information entropy, you want to go from high entropy levels to low, because you go from the max amount of discourse to not knowing anything and like flailing around and like knowing things being in order. I'm on that journey. That journey. Bouldering is what it was. He goes one time and then immediately gets into it.
That's good.
Yes. So that's what I'm trying to think of.
Yeah. Coming back to our earlier question of, is the equidistant spacing of particles considered high or low entropy?
Yes.
So for people who haven't heard about the existential crisis that is the heat death of the universe, it is hypothesized as one of the eventual fates of the universe. If we take entropy to be true, eventually all the stars will burn out and explode, and all the planets will disintegrate into dust, and everything will disperse to be equidistant away from everything, because we're going from order, planets, to disorder, dust in space. And things will just keep moving further away from each other, because it's just going to happen, and we're getting further away from order.
Would it though?
So,
because if you're saying that the heat death appears and everything is equidistant, then at that stage you wouldn't be getting further away from each other. Sorry to throw a spanner in your explanation here, but if things are equidistant and we've got to that stage, things wouldn't be going further apart. It would be far apart. That's it.
But that space could be getting bigger in between them, you know, with the expansion of the universe.
Yeah, but then it doesn't expand uniformly. it's not all the space at every point.
But the theory is that it would be the case. Because we know the expansion is not constant.
No, but I'm saying currently it's expanding from one point outwards.
Yeah.
But at that point, you can't have things expanding away from each other perfectly. You'd have to have, they would all be still being moved away from one particular point. Like, if you had the space expanding perfectly, it'd be a square that's getting bigger.
Yeah.
But if it's moving away from one point, it'd be a square that then turns into a parallelogram with the top edge is longer than the bottom edge.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
It's not uniform. Yeah.
Well, I didn't come up with this theory.
So okay, mate, sorry. I'm not putting you on blast. I'm putting this theory on blast.
We'll get them to answer for their crimes. So the heat death of the universe, often hypothesized as the eventual fate of the universe, involves a scenario where all usable energy is evenly distributed and no temperature gradients exist. In this state, the universe reaches a state of maximum entropy. This is the highest entropy there could ever be, where no further useful work can be done and all systems are in a state of thermodynamic equilibrium. This state is often associated with extremely high entropy as the universe becomes increasingly homogeneous and disordered over time. So in our logical sense, we'd go, that seems quite ordered because all of the atoms are equidistant apart, or, you know, there's a uniformity in the gradient of temperature. But in the theory of thermodynamics, it's extremely high entropy because there's no energy there in the system to be used for anything.
Used as heat.
Exactly.
That's the thing you have to remember from the 1865 version. Inevitably, everything turns into useless heat.
So in the context of the heat death of the universe, the equidistant arrangement of atoms would be considered a state of low entropy, while the eventual state of maximum entropy associated with the heat death would be a state of high entropy. So, yeah, we have, if you're looking at it at the atoms, very low entropy, highly ordered. If you're thinking about it as in entropy, as in like usable energy heat, very high entropy, nothing can be used. So yeah, this is where entropy gets confusing. Science sucks sometimes. I think this is just a problem with defining and using words. Like, someone defined or introduced entropy and people are like, that's really good. And then someone kind of went, it kind of makes it relevant for this viewpoint too, but decided to use the same word that people have already attached a meaning to. And then here we are 150 years later, confused, because we've been using it for both things.
Not to add to the confusion, but I rewatched Tenet last week.
Okay,
Week? Last weekend? At the weekend? I think maybe it was at the weekend. And not watching it in the cinema was great because I could turn up the audio for the bits that I were absolutely completely balked.
Yeah.
Oh dear. The bit where they go out on the outside of the boat and I knew it was happening and I knew that was going to get angry. I was like, I was going to whack the audio up to 35 because I just, so many times.
That's fair.
The whispering.
Wisp.
So the reason I brought up Tenet is because the whole plot line is reverse entropy.
Yeah.
And the whole idea is that in the future, due to nuclear fusion, they've worked out the ability of reversing the polarity of entropy on certain objects and then sending them back through time, even though they don't look like they're going back through time, but they are actually going back through their entropy to the past. Try and take a bomb from the future to the past to kill everybody in the past so that climate change doesn't happen and that they can save themselves in the future from the past. And there's a whole bit about the grandfather paradox and like, what do they think is going to happen? Because surely if they destroy the past, they'll change the future. And if it was going to happen in the past, they would have already saved themselves. So yeah, the whole thing of that is skipped over because Robert Pattinson's character just kind of says, I believe whatever it's going to be is going to be. And then that's it. You're like, cool. I love those explanations.
That's one way just to skip over it.
Yeah, it was cross over it. And then
I forgot he was in it. Yeah.
Yeah, he's one of the
I guess like
the two.
Whenever this problem comes up in popular culture, I just force myself to believe this is the first loop.
For the sake of
Suspending my disbelief.
yeah, suspension of disbelief there. You're like, okay, this is either the first loop or it's the fifth, but they haven't got out yet. That kind of shenanigans.
They're
but it's the catching the bullets. That's a particular hard one. And then a bullet wound from a reversed bullet deals more damage and is a death sentence compared to like being able to save yourself from like a normal bullet. And I spent the whole bit of like, how is it more damaging? Like, because the bullets
they just
always
to
been
the ante,
in them.
They? Well, they, I guess they, if it comes bullets through flat side first,
no, it's not backwards. Like, but oh, it implies that the bullets always been in them, and that they, at that point, their core catching it. It means that
The damage has been done for X amount of time before that.
Yeah.
In the correct flow of time.
No, yeah, in the correct. If you're in the correct and the bullet's in reverse, it's implying that that bullet has always been in you and will always be in you. Yeah. Unless you go and reverse yourself and then take the drugs, which is what happens to one of the main characters. There's no spoilers here. Tenet's been up for ages. And it was on a streaming platform, so go watch it yourself. It's great. It's all right. It's an entertaining movie. The final battle scene is trash. I absolutely hate it. The idea is so good, but like, I just don't think the director, what's his name, Noland? I can't remember whatever his name is.
Chris Nolan, is it?
Chris Nolan, yeah. Just can't do large scale war scenes.
Right.
When he was making that, well, it just looks like a bunch of people playing airsoft, and that is it. Because they're all running together as a group. There's no like tactics. There's no like take cover. They're all out in the open. There's people reverse catching bullets, and you're like, and it's like they had some interesting ideas, like that they. A building's entropy was being reversed because a group was going back in time. It's called like a time pincer movement. It's a great idea for if time travel worked. Is they reverse one group and they keep one group going forwards. It's called a time pincer.
Right.
So the people that are going back in time can give information about the fight to the people going forwards in time. And the people going forwards in time can like clear the landing zone so that people can like get out. And
that's wild.
It's a crazy, crazy idea. And I feel like there was, when he was directing it, he was like, okay, there's a certain beats that are cool, and we're going to try and find a way of getting to these cool sections that would have these cool ideas about reverse time. Like there's a woman running along and some guy like reaches out and warns her that the building is being reversed. Or they're reversing and the building's going forwards. So she wants to watch out because the building is fixing itself. Because they're going back in time. You gotta think they're going back in time. So the building is fixing itself and she needs to watch out. And then she gets like sucked into the building and thrown around because she hasn't watched out for the building not falling down.
And do they have like, how do they communicate? Do they speak in reverse?
Yeah, they've got these specific special devices that play their voice back to front.
That's right. Okay, so yeah, they did think about that.
Yeah, because there's the rooms where they go through the special machine, and they've got two-way talking devices. Again, that doesn't really work because they talk to people in the past. Like some guy makes a phone call from the room, and phones himself, or phones another guy in the past, which is his future. And it kind of like makes things a bit squiggly. Otherwise,
that is wild.
Pretty good movie.
I remember watching it and going, oh, I wasn't fussed by that. So maybe I will watch it again.
It was the bit where they were like looking at the scientist, and the scientist has got like a full slab of reversed rock with bullets in it. And she's like, yeah, you just gotta like catch the bullets. You're like, right, okay. Sure.
Or in your gun to shoot.
You've got to like catch the bullets, and you got to like catch it to pick it up. Yeah, it's a bit of a. She does the whole wishy-washy with the whole science.
the classic.
Fast and loose. Right. Moving on from Tenet. The Arrow of Time.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's quite a good thing to segue into.
Yeah, this is the one-way direction, or asymmetry of the asymmetry of time, developed in 1927, if you didn't know.
Yeah, so the second law of thermodynamics, as we've said, says that over time, entropy in an isolated system can increase but not decrease, and that process is not reversible. Because of that, some people use this as proof that time exists and that it moves forward and only forward. Mm-hmm. And this is why we have a memory of the past and future. Because some people are like, okay, we have this perception of like the past being in the past and the future being in the future, but like, how do we know it? And this is one of the, I guess, theories that people put forward that proves time moves.
So the idea is you draw a line, an arrow, arbitrarily in any direction, and if you follow the arrow, you'd find more and more random events in the state of the world. Then you know the arrow is pointing towards the future. And if the random elements decrease, you know it's pointing towards the past. Which is an interesting thought. It was created by a British astrophysicist called Arthur Eddington.
What a great name.
Yeah, Arthur Eddington was. Yeah, it's like Douglas Adams. What a fantastic name. but he gave 3 points to note about this arrow. The first, it is vividly recognized by consciousness. So there has to be consciousness around to recognize said arrow for it to work. Makes sense. But if you think about it, does time exist if the things aren't there to recognize it? I don't know. That's a very metaphysical question. It is equally insisted on by our reasoning faculty, which tells us that a reversal of the arrow would render the external world nonsensical. So if you turned it round, would things just completely break down? The truth, that's when you get the reverse entropy.
Yeah, this is where you can think about backwards. Yeah, if you play a video of a tree burning and then reverse it, it doesn't make much sense to see a tree that's on fire then remake itself.
Yeah. They touch on specific things like everything's revert. A, you can't breathe if you reverse yourself and turn it because it's to do with oxygen like going through your lungs.
Yeah.
Like the membrane. Yeah. I don't know how they say it, but essentially you have to catch your own breath or something like that. But also like elements and stuff.
Might as well call this movie Catch. The bullets. Catch the guy. Yeah. Catch your breath.
Because one of the guy crashes his car and some guy sets it on fire. But then it's cold. And I can't remember the reason they give for being like, everything like hot is cold and like if there's a fire, you'll die. Because he almost dies of hypothermia. This is one of the jokes they make.
Well, it makes sense. Because a fire in the normal time is exothermic. Heat is given out. So in reversal, heat would be taken in. So it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. But the issue being is the guy that sets the thing on fire, he's also going backwards. So I don't know how he like lights it and then sets it on fire, because surely...
Yeah, that's wild.
The fire would have been there, then he would have put it out.
Maybe he just caught it. Maybe he
just caught the flame. He's a Fantastic Four. And then the third note that Eddington places, it makes no appearance in the physical science except in the study of organizations of a number of individuals, by which he means that it is only observed in entropy, a statistical mechanics phenomenon arising from a system.
Right. Did that last one again?
It makes no appearance in physical science except in the study of organization of a number of individuals.
And individuals being conscious beings?
Which is only observed in entropy, a statistical mechanical phenomenon arising from a system. So it means like if you were to view a bird flying, it makes no appearance in that.
Yeah, because it arises from an entire system.
Yeah. So you'd only be able to observe it if you looked at the number of individuals arising from a whole system.
Okay. That makes sense. Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, it's weird. And one of the things I came across when looking at the Arrow of Time is it proposes actually a question that people just don't have an answer to yet, which is the thing that kind of we came across earlier, which is why did the universe have such a high level of order or low entropy in the past, resulting in the distinction between past and future and the second law of thermodynamics? If we assume the Big Bang was a point of very high order, why? And that potentially is the creation and reason that we have time that we do.
Mm.
As we do.
This is very interesting about, because I know you said the Arrow of Time is asymmetry of time, which is asymmetrical.
Yes.
But there are symmetry of time, so T symmetry events.
Yeah.
Like, which are time reversible events or forces even. So gravity, for example, if you recorded a ball being tossed up, slows to a stop and then falls, is a case we're recording, it would look realistic forwards and backwards. So that system is T-symmetrical.
Yeah.
However, the process of the ball bouncing and eventually coming to a stop is not time reversible.
Yeah, that's true. Because if you reverse that footage, you just see a ball going from being on the floor and then gaining bounceability.
Yeah. So, yeah, interesting.
What's the application of that? Is there? Or is that a way just to measure or view time's arrow? I'm wondering if that's used in any way.
So it says, well, going forwards, kinetic energy is dissipated and entropy is increased. So entropy may be one of the few processes that is not time reversible. So there's no T-symmetry to entropy. According to the statistical notion of increasing entropy, the arrow of time is identified with the decrease of free energy. So,
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. So anything you videoed and reversed that it didn't look natural, you could consider to be a system that has entropy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, essentially.
Okay.
Because yeah, then you got to take, because if you're doing the whole like throwing a ball up and down, you have to take like potential energy as well as kinetic energy into it.
Yeah.
Because as you throw the ball up, the potential energy is increasing. And then it levels itself up and you catch it. That doesn't work when you drop it because it's at its maximum potential energy when it's being dropped.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah. My last bit is actually about information entropy, which I talked a bit on earlier. But there's actually models or formulas for information entropy.
Okay.
To give it a full definition classification. Information entropy is a concept within information theory. It tells how much information there is in an event. In general, the more certain or deterministic the event is, the less information it will contain. More clearly stated, information is an increase in uncertainty or entropy. The concept of information entropy is created by mathematician Claude Shannon. Shannon! So...
great name.
Yeah, the more deterministic the event is, the less information it contains, which is always something that I always think is really interesting.
I never really thought about it. It makes sense. Like, if a result only has one outcome, if you're flipping a coin compared to spinning a ball on a roulette table... the coin flip has only two outcomes compared to, was it 50 on a roulette? I can't remember. There's a lot less information to be garnered from that. It's more certain. It's a lot more certain in a coin flip than a roulette wheel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in things like computers and whatnot, it's to do with like how much information can be shared, how much you know as a person as well. That's what I said about the learning, the bouldering is... I just don't know how to boulder. So there's a lot more information that is there for me to garner.
Yeah.
So it's less entropy. So it is the formula, model, even. Information and its entropy can be modeled by R. And I will explain, I'm not just going to say what it is, I'll go through each letter. R equals HX minus HYX. And the X's are in brackets.
R equals HX
minus HYX. So R is the received signal.
Okay.
H represents the information. And then HY is the average ambiguity, or HX meaning the uncertainty or the entropy. So you've got the information minus the uncertainty will give you the received signal.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
So for physical, information theory, this has applications for like lossless data compression, statistical inference, cryptography, sometimes actually disciplines of biology, physics, and machine learning.
I've used systems similar to this in signal detection theory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like when you're trying to, let's say an animal produces a certain signal, vocalization in most of my cases, over time, and then you want to test if a stimulus or event changes that signal. What you would do is you'd take the observed and you'd minus the ambiguity, which would be the signal without the event, and that would give you the received signal difference, which is what we use to be like, oh, is there an effect or not? It definitely makes a lot of sense.
Mm.
That's very interesting. Yeah, very cool.
What I didn't realize until I had to do some learning about it, when they do like compression or zip files on a computer, the way that it works is, let me take it down to its root form. This is going to be not correct, because I'm not going to describe it correctly in like the way that bits and metadata and all that kind of stuff works, because I don't have time to get into it. But say that an image, you take it down into like bytes and bits, would be letters, say, that the computer interprets. If you were to compress an image as such, if the way that it works is if the image is like AA, BB, CC, DDDD, like 3Ds, the way that it compresses it is it just goes, okay, there's 2As, 2Bs, 3Cs. And that's how the compression works. So when you take it out of the compression, because that takes up less space, so when you take it out of compression, it just writes AA, BB, CCC.
Right.
So instead of it taking up 2, 4, 6, 7, 8, it just takes up 6. And then if you imagine that for the whole image, that's how it, when you compress an image or something like that, it like takes up less data space.
Okay.
Mightage.
And then what happens to those Ds? They're just lost?
No. You essentially, the compressed file that you can't open is a set of instructions for the computer when it's decompressing it to rewrite
to restore
as AA, BB, CCC.
I see.
Mm.
That's cool. Wicked clever.
Like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's sick.
Sick stuff. Sick man.
Sick indeed. All right. Coming up to the hour.
We are, yeah.
I would say, if anyone's still interested in this, I don't have time to go over it. But one thing that seems to defy the second law of thermodynamics is biological systems, so animals. And it seems like in animals, is order not created where it should be, if we're taking the second law of thermodynamics by as written law, should it not be decreased? But actually, order is decreased in a large sense, because while, let's say, we create order, we create structures inside our bodies, and we have bodies, in order to create that order, we are increasing entropy in everything around us. But that, if anyone's interested in going down a rabbit hole by themselves, is a very interesting one to go down. I guess that'll bring us to a wrap, I suppose, unless you've got anything you would else like to thumb into the show.
Maxwell's demon.
Oh, well, there we go. That's ominous.
It was a thought experiment created by James Clerk Maxwell, in which he suggested how the second law of thermodynamics might be hypothetically violated by demons.
Oh.
Yeah. This is wild. You know why you went into it? So in the thought experiment, a demon controls a small door between two compartments of gas. As individual gas molecules approach the door, the demon quickly opens and shuts the door so that only fast molecules are passed into one of the chambers, while only slow molecules are passed into the other. Because fast molecules are hotter, the demon's behavior causes one chamber to warm up and the other to cool down, thereby decreasing entropy and violating the second law of thermodynamics.
Yeah.
Which seems ridiculous to layman people, individuals, but it actually provoked debate and theoretical work on the relationship between thermodynamics and information theory, which currently still extends to this day from 1867, with a number of scientists still arguing that theoretical consideration rules rule out any practical device of violating the second law in this way. Which, it's sort of like one of those thought experiments, which is like, yeah, great thought experiment, but like practical, complete and utterly useless.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
Not that I have any scientific background to do so, but that seems logical.
I don't think when someone says a thought experiment starts with a demon that you can be like, oh, you know, I'm pretty certain I can rule this one out.
Yeah, that's fair. I'd agree with you there. All right. Sick. So that will bring us to a wrap. Don't forget to share this with everyone in the world ever.
And, we didn't say the tagline.
What?
We hope we've decreased your entropy of this subject.
Oh, see, I normally do that at the beginning. I never really do that at the end. I hope that we have decreased the entropy of information around this subject for you. That is our aim and goal each and every time, with varying success. I would say.
Varying success. Yeah, decreasing the entropy of entropy.
There we go.
Yep.
Bottle it up. If you want more information, fun science, you can follow us out on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, Spotify, whichever place you're listening to this on right now, and hey, others. Tom. So if you can give us a rating, follow, that'd be absolutely fantastic.
If you put them off, we talked about this, you're only allowed one.
But you also said at the end of the show I could do more than one.
That's true, because they're already gone. No one's here.
Exactly.
Just look out, there's just crickets. If this was a live event, just empty seats.
Turtles all the way down.
Or just two individuals clapping very loudly.
I'll take it. If you're one of those two individuals, we love your face. Cool. We'll catch you guys the next week then. Peace.
Javana.